Welcome to the Kill the Lion podcast. It's me, Cody Clark. I know these are infrequent. Don't get on my ass. Don't complain. But yes, I do know that I barely do this podcast. But when I do, it's a great show. And today is no different. We have Stained Hanes. If you enjoyed my Stained Hanes show, essentially the pilot to the series we're doing together, if you enjoyed that, you're going to hear me talk to him for an hour and a half or however long. And you're going to enjoy that as well. And if you haven't seen the Stained Hanes show, please watch it. It's good. It's free on YouTube. Just a reminder, killthelionfilms.com, $1 a month, $2.50 a month, $5 a month. Just set it and forget it. It's just a donation. It just keeps me making movies and doing all the great stuff that I do. Even if you don't like my movies and you just like the podcast, do it. Even if you hate this podcast and just like my movies, do it. Just give me money. Pocket change per month. Keeps the ship fucking on the water or whatever the saying is. All right. Without further ado, here's me and Stained Hanes. Stained Hanes, good to have you here.
Buenas noches, or for you ladies and jerks listening elsewhere, buenos dias, buenas tardes, and if you haven't had lunch yet, eat lunch, you animals.
Well, this has been a long time coming. We've talked about doing a podcast episode together for a very long time. I'm glad we can finally do it. I'm glad it's like, you know, a week before we're doing our first like live show together, our stand up, I guess like me, you, and Taylor Drew, because it rhymes.
You're a poet and didn't know it.
but yeah, it's just, we've done so many great things together now. We create together and apart. How did we meet? On the social media, because you can find interesting people and then parlay, go off, do amazing things, right?
You have to give yourself some credit, because not the most popular take, but I think you can get a read on people through the internet. If you have multimedia of them somehow, that helps tremendously. But even like PFP choice and some handfuls of words, or if you interact with them, if they spawn in your notifications or DMs, sometimes like first thought, best thought, especially with intuition, your intuition will never lie to you. So I remember we crossed paths on Twitter. Kyler's movie was premiering. And you hit me up and I pulled through with shirts and I had no idea what you looked like. So I just walked by like this mastermind in the back row who just drew no attention to himself. And I'm like sizing up everyone. I'm like, is that Mr. Smithers looking guy, Cody? No. Because I didn't even bother to go through your like media tab or whatever. I'm just like, yeah, this guy's Brooklyn trash. Oh, that's it. That's it. You know, the T-800s come marching through the door like we're on team like 718. Everyone's for themselves. I'm sorry. I don't make the rules. Mongolians on horseback wielding flaming claymores that sing out of tune. It's just team 718. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah.
So, I got a delightful read, and also like, Kill the Lion. It's a reference to a Bukowski poem. Now Bukowski wrote my favorite poem, The Laughing Heart, but he's not my favorite poet. That's John Ashbery. So I will conclude me running my mouth just to throw in real quickly. It's great to do this live because you have been gently persuading me to do stand-up, and you have been gently reminding me that the opportunity is always there, even though I am now almost done unweirding and unisolating myself for the second book. And taken a little extra longer than usual because I got mass reported and suspended on Twitter for impersonating myself. So we had to put the needle on the record back at the start once again. This is attempt number 6. Inshallah, we'll get there at the end to side 2. But no, my first stand-up appearance will be happening sort of on your best terms.
Well said. Stand-up is something I've loved forever, as I'm sure you have loved forever. Mm-hmm. But doing it is something I fell in love with really in the last 7 or 8 months. And that was, I owe that to Taylor Drew. Mm-hmm. I talked about this on my episode with her, the previous episode, so I won't go into it too much. But, you know, there's loving something and then there's falling in love with something. Mm. Always loved stand-up. But I fell in love with it as a mode of expression fairly recently. And it is a, because you're super into local and people, mm-hmm. and connections, which is, I think, probably part of what drew us together, because yeah. that mindset, when you find somebody else with that mindset, that's the shorthand of all shorthands.
Yeah, they pick up what you put down, mm-hmm. or... My favorite way of putting it is people catching the same things in different waters.
Yeah.
And in spite of geographical distance, that happens a lot more common than people would suspect.
Right. So it's almost like with dating apps. There's the people that want to be on the dating apps and there's people that want to get off the dating apps.
Yeah, yeah.
I treat social media in that way to a certain extent, where it's like, I want to find my people, but then I want to see, all right, what can we do and what can we become? And I felt so much from, and I have felt so much from doing stand-up. It's a part of me now. And what I've gotten from it, I can see that you would love as well and you would connect to as well. That's why I've been encouraging you in that regard, is because it's like a, you know, writing books is one thing. Tweeting is another thing. And you get something from all these things, as I have, but stand-up has been this like missing thing that I needed and wasn't getting. And I just think you're going to love it. And I can't wait for people to, I hope people come out to the show. If you're in New York City, as you are listening to this, you still have time to get tickets and you will see me. You'll see the lady who inspired me to get on stage and take stand-up seriously. And you will see Stane Haynes.
The big ups to the fabulous Taylor Drew, who first and foremost, just to like throw this out there, because I don't want to be that meme of John Oliver where it's like, it's 2015, like it's the current year, right? I thought might have been able, like, as I got older, I don't agree with, but I sort of understand, like, some pole smoker like Steve Albini was like,
I was edgy back then and now I have a conscience.
Right. So for him to be like,
there's a lot of institutional sexism in the arts that you wouldn't expect from a place like punk rock.
And like Broken Clock twice a day. That's right, dude, from Big Black, and was the audio engineer for like that second Nirvana album. Good on you. So like, but not to be mean, I never understood why he got into photo editing and had a decent job at it when, like, you have enough money to raise a small army and take over the Congo with what you made off of, like, In Utero. Like, what do you need to work for, dude? Yeah. Again, like, good on him for having the immigrant work ethic despite being an American bred and born honky. But you know, in for Taylor Drew to have to deal with like the woman trademark experience, and I only know this because like you had mentioned like a bit of details and more like to going to open mics or to going like the fact that it's a girl, like, still,
yeah.
Which by the way, how is stand up behind hip hop in terms of all encompassing altruism, and where like it doesn't matter if you're a disabled, web footed, two spirit, transgender, Native American, Muslim refugee, if you can make a good beat, that's it. Like, everyone's gonna be bopping their head to it till Absolutely. The break of dawn. Not in stand up though.
Mm-hmm.
Like how stand up precedes hip hop.
Oh yeah.
So how did you're the smart one? Like,
that's a great question. I obviously, I go to a lot of open mics. There's been trans comedians that's their only thing, and they're trans first and comedian distant second. And there's trans comedians that I've seen where it's comedian big time first, trans so far distant second. And I think that's what we're talking about here, mm-hmm. is like, if the beats are number one, then you're good.
That's it. That's, you know, all that should matter.
Yeah, dude. And it's, so would Taylor, you know, Taylor is a great comedian. She's also a beautiful lady. That's like a cool asset. Great. But like, yes, a lot of the structure of a lot of these things is like, I think people are distracted by surface a lot of times.
Oh, yeah.
And they forget that there's some construction that's going on here.
It's kind of sort of why I kept wearing the mask, because like, let that surface level lifting happen on my own terms.
Yes. I fully agree with you there. I think there's a portion of the audience that's there for surface elements, and there's a portion of audience that's like, all right, surface elements takes all of 0.001 seconds to intake. What are you going to give me for the next 5 minutes? You know,
right. Hopefully $10, because that's his ass in the seat. But no. I think if I'm misremembering, my bad. But I think you also, like, we touched on how guys who are more into the idea of being a comedian rather than being a comedian, and I was just talking to my homie, Carl Simpleton, about this earlier today. Shout outs to Carl, hardest working man in the industry. He just kills rodents and farms and barns. Hardest working man in the industry, though.
I believe it.
Doesn't even use dachshunds, and like, that's easy mode. So, obstinate little bastards. I love them, though. I can't get enough of them. Fucking salchichas. They're the best. Otherwise known as chorizos, depending on the part of Latin America you come from. Estoy escuchando. Stained Haynes y Cody Clark, hablando aquí en Nueva York. So, I was talking to Carl about how he mentioned this. They did studies where they were like, talking about writing activates the same part of the brain as writing. Mm-hmm. So, like, then who's to say that's not the same fucking thing as like carpentry, being a big man in a gym or on the field, or like your job, or the job you tell people you have, or like the creative thing you want people to know you for. And surprise, surprise, that brain activation, conceptual reality, out mouth and fingertips. The internet uses that against people in ways. I'm just going to leave it at notable figures and culture war. You could have dudes drinking out of the hollowed skull of a child, and they're like, based. Oh my God, give him the mayor's stash and the keys to the city. I'm going to march and fight and die for this guy. I don't give a fuck if we're going to be taking on a legion of chimeras and Zeus himself, this lying man that has been shown to lie. I still love him. I'm going to retweet him. God bless America. And like, right. The internet facilitates that really well with culture war. There's a left-wing version of that too, but I'm not funny and smart enough to do that.
And also, who cares what's going on?
Yeah,
it's less interesting. No, yeah, absolutely. And I think there's people that choose a lifestyle, because what are we talking about here? If you become a particular type of artist, you're choosing the lifestyle of that a lot of times. Or even if you're like into anime, you're choosing the lifestyle of someone who's into anime. I think there's a lot of there's doers and people who don't do, right? So I think both can be just as susceptible. I think somebody might like comic books, but they also might go to a comic book shop and like see the kind of guys that are into comic books and think like, man, it would be great if I could justify the fact that I don't want to shower and I don't want to, you know, whatever, because I'm this, you know? And there's a similar thing with comedy. There's comedians I meet that they're transcending that. And there's comedians that I meet that it's like, dude, take a shower. You'll be better on stage. I promise you.
Not to show my own shit. Okay. But there's a line in my upcoming book. It's all one thing. The Simpsons is Talmud for millennials. What is the comic book guy equivalent for stand-up comedy? Like, because The Simpsons, I'll spare you, The Simpsons did it, like beating that dead horse and riding it down a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
But comic book guy articulated the worst part of a specific medium and fandom. But back then, they were also gatekeeper because, like, they ran the store, you know? But then you saw the people comic book guy, like, was in cahoots with, and, like, yeah. So what's the stand-up comedy version of comic book guy?
Okay, so it's, I mean, this is, we're basically doing, like, I don't know if you remember this, but, like, the hipster handbook, when that was a thing. Like, I mean, that's a deep reference. That's 20, 25
that's deck,
years
bro.
Ago.
That's deck.
Yeah.
if these yeah, are uncool, it was Finn.
If I were to describe the comic book guy version of a stand-up comedian, it's always only open mics. That's as far as they go. And it's not writing is a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking, I'm just going to write it on stage, except they're not really. They're just killing time. it's a lot of what else. That's a phrase they like to say a lot. What Ooh. Else?
Oh, kind of like how audiences always call out for the Wu Clan, but they're never on stage. Oh, this what else guy? Everyone, what's his deal?
It's scrolling through the phone.
Let's put a pin on this for 1 second, dude. Watching unfunny hacks read off their phone mm-hmm. last decade became normalized, and anyone who ever applauded at that has to be smacked.
Yeah.
Ideally by like a gorilla or maybe like a guy named Louie from Red Hook that's 6'8 and welds. You need to be smacked with the might of 1,000 men because it became like, well, it's good enough and they laughed, which does not justify the phone being out in the first place.
Yeah. If I'm holding my phone, I want it to be because it's a prop for the bit that I'm doing.
Yes.
That's been my rule with stand-up. The one exception I make for phone holding is that sometimes if you're doing a roast battle or if you're doing a roast, you're literally writing jokes 20 minutes beforehand and they need to be intricate and they need to be delivered with all the words in the right order. So that's the one thing I cut slack for.
Oh, and the notes app also has spell check. So you're not sounding like you've got dyslexia mid-sentence when you're in sure. the middle of like making someone like, you know, yeah. look bad.
And if you're at an open mic and it's all comedians and you're just like, you just want to hear how something sounds, it's like, yeah, you cut people slack. But what I mean is like, okay, so I'm describing two things. I'm describing a person who's just talking and leaving no room for laughter. Mm-hmm. So, because it's a participation art form. It's the part of the contract is you need to give us breaks for us to process or laugh at what you're doing.
Right.
And if you are not creating those moments, oh my God, the audience is just, it's not so much they don't like you. It's that they don't trust you. You know, it's just like, dude, you don't trust that we'll laugh. Let us laugh. You know,
try.
Yeah.
You know what? Just very quickly, would you say that part of this is underestimating the audience or underestimating the audience's intelligence? Or is it someone who sometimes you go to a live reading and you see people who gives a fuck if they have a hyperlink blue clickable name on Wikipedia? And that you could look them up on Google Image too and see several great and 48 unflattering fucking photos of this guy. He has books in Barnes & Noble, and you see him live, and he's like, I'm wearing a blazer. And like, wow, it's the first time you're saying this in front of a fucking crowd.
Yeah.
You're Mr. Clickable Wikipedia article guy? Fuck, you were interviewed by Vanity Fair and here you are stammering like it's your first fucking battle of the bands. What the fuck? So in stand-up, can you tell when it's someone's first time, like trying a line or an idea?
I saw somebody last night who had never been to, had never done stand-up before in their life. And there's moments where that's the case and you see some rare, awesome new talent and you're like, thank God they chose to do it. And mm-hmm. then there's other people who, okay, the guy I saw last night, I would never use a name because they could, a week later, they could completely change and correct their style. But when I saw this person last night, first time doing stand up, brought his girlfriend, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to impress her, blah, blah, blah. He proceeded to tell a story that his friends have liked and his family has liked and has no jokes in it mm-hmm. and is probably only funny if you've spent years, if not decades, knowing all the people that were in the story.
Ooh.
And there's just no room for the uninitiated. There's no way in. There's no, like, everybody wants to be entertained. Everybody wants to get on board. And if the train is just like always running like a bullet train and you can't hop on it as a hobo and like hang out, then what are we doing here?
Right.
So that's, I think that's a rookie mistake, is talk as just like almost like you're holding your finger on one key and you're just letting it fill the entire screen. That's the equivalent of what they're doing on stage. And they think, oh my God, like what did I do wrong? And it's just like, what you did wrong is there were no jokes and there was no room for laughter. And watching him walk out with like his girlfriend and watching his girlfriend's face and just seeing like the thing of like, oh, tonight is a night where I have to console, where it was sold as a night of like, I'm going to kill and we're going to go home and we're going to fuck like bunnies on drugs I haven't even heard of.
meth-based research chemicals yeah. that you can only find in the dark. We're going to fuck like jackrabbits right. on research chemicals centered around meth. But instead, the whole walk back, you just knew in the back of her mind, she was hearing, baby, come back. Doo-doo-doo-doo. You can blame it all on me. Baby, come back.
Yeah.
And now she's thinking about, like, John from marketing, who's like, he's had it for her for, like, fucking months.
Yeah. She was like, yeah. Oh, this is a completely different night than I signed up for. Yeah. This is, oh, it was good. You know, that's...
Yeah. She will never do the going down on him with Altoids in her mouth trick ever again. Never. He'll probably get something instead, but she only does that if she really likes them. Yeah. She still likes him, doesn't really like him
and
anymore.
She's never gonna do going down on him with Mentos and Coke in there, or is it Coke or Dr. Pepper? I forget.
Mentos and Coke.
That's oh. Yeah, she's saving that for me if she ever sees me do stand-up.
Mentos, the fresh maker.
Yeah, so like I directly attribute my success thus far doing stand-up because I consider it success. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but like I have peers that look at what I do and are like, dude, you're good at this and that's all you need. I'm not talking about I'm on NBC or whatever. Like, I do not give a shit.
Ladies and jerks listening at home, don't just take it from Cody, if you're not hip to social media, he clips his stuff and you can't argue with results. He gets laughs and people yeah. do, like, he gets pounds and hugs and people tell him what he already knows. Not to be mean to, like, people dapping you up and saying things that are very meaningful, but I think, you know, we were talking about this before we started recording. You mentioned that an aspect of Jewish mysticism, and where, like, if someone gets, if I'm misquoting and misremembering, I'm sorry, but like if you get good enough at one thing, that you could see the function.
Well, that's the Buddhist thing.
Oh, yeah, that's the Buddhist yeah. thing. Oh, I'm
yeah.
sorry.
I talked about both of them. Yeah.
Oh, okay, but just real quickly, that whole Hebraic school of thought thing, that was something else. Like the 12 people that, like, if they went away, the world would fall apart. One of them, surely.
Yeah, we were talking about two things. One was a Jewish mysticism thing of there's 12 or 13 or however many small amount of people in the world that, were they to cease to exist, were they to die, the world would cease to exist as well. And how they describe these people is often they're working with their hands, they're working with the people, they don't know they're special. You know, all these qualities that really is like the barometer for just like a, oh my God, I met this carpenter who's like amazing, who's like right. Zen. You know, we all right. meet these people in life, a plumber who's like,
garbage men, yeah. like a barber or back in the day, cab drivers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
yeah. But anyway, the
applicability thing was that started because there was a statue of Buddha And it was either like a...
That we saw when we met up. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it wasn't like a fat Chinese Santa Buddha. It wasn't like Buddha laughing as Sagat Tiger uppercuts you into next week, Buddha. It was like, you know, hey, what's up, Buddha? Like, you know, hey, man. Like,
yeah, it was... Yeah.
Like, all, I can't tell if you're smug or not, Buddha.
It was like you go to your friend's house and there's just like another guy on the couch, but you don't get a feeling of like, oh, this guy's like bad news. You're just like, oh, hey, what's up? You know, it was that Buddha. The
guy on the couch from Half-Baked Buddha?
Yeah, exactly. Which is underrated Buddha.
No, it's August. best Buddha, yeah, depending time of day.
The DVD Snooty Boochies edition Buddha, you know, like
please do not corrupt Buddha and bring him to moviepoopshoot.com.
Exactly.
This Buddha is like, if you ever meet the Buddha in the road, shump him.
All right, so to bring it back to what I was saying, before we get sidetracked,
I was talking about the applicability in you doing stand-up as an artist, because like you've written, directed,
yes,
and edited and wrote poetry and books, and you have a lot of utility that you've grown out and fleshed out into a fucking honest to God skill tree. So it's not a one-to-one perfect ratio carryover, but there's fucking spillover. Like, yes, they're like, if you know how to cook, if you could make a Thanksgiving fucking meal, you could probably bake something perfectly on the first try.
Yeah,
even though baking is an exact science and you could freestyle cooking up to a degree, like you could wing up, like, bro, if you got the fucking Pock recipe book and there's like a dish with like 36 ingredients and you only got 34 out of 36 and one of them was Thai basil and you got regular basil, if you didn't fuck this up, it's going to be delicious. Okay. So it's not make or break. Baking is a different thing, but if you could cook, you could bake.
Yes.
So comedians have always talked about like writing and material down. So like, if you're a writer, then like writing material, you already, like, you're halfway done with the fucking race, because you have to learn how to write. To write material, which is something comedians don't ever talk about.
You don't need nepotism to start your journey on third base. You just need that's a great thing. But there's another version of that, which is if you've had a creative thought that you've brought into fruition ever before, anything else you try creatively is going to be fine. And a lot of my homework of how I've gotten good at doing stand up was done without any consideration towards it being beneficial towards doing stand-up. It was just, like you said, writing, editing, honing, revising, speaking into a microphone, whether it be a podcast or whatever, acting, you know, all these things. It's like, you build muscles that can be used for things other than lifting weights. They can be used for carrying a person. They can be used for whatever. So I built these creative muscles and I'm just like, learning. Look, I said this on the podcast with Taylor Drew, so I don't want to get too much into it, but one of the things I said, which I think is beneficial, is that, you know, they say, oh, it takes 10 years to be a great stand-up. It takes 10 years if you've never done a lick of creative writing in your life.
An illiterate author.
Yeah. It takes 10 years if you're starting your journey of making any art. But I've written books, you've written books, you can talk off the dome, I can talk off the dome, those two things combined, you can do anything, you know?
There's
I'm not saying there's not a learning curve to doing stand-up specifically, I just think it's so surmountable that a week or two of going on stage, you're like, oh, okay, I know what this feels like now, and off to the races.
Yeah, because I think to circle back to someone's first time on stage and when you notice it, I think it's because even when I hosted the Cars and Women magazine live readings, or when I read a piece from my first book, I Am Stuck in a Porno Movie, I read that in the third Cars and Women magazine live reading, and I kind of couldn't tell the audience reaction of what I saw faces, and there were like waves of good sound, because I was trying not to mispronounce. But that's different than stand up, I know. But that is like,
don't fuck this up, 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 don't fuck this up.
Like on a constant loop in my head, you know? And then with this glassy eyed look, she started sucking my dick. So it wasn't until I got off stage and my boy Monoxus was like, whatever you did to get that ready, like, just keep doing that. That just whatever you did, don't change anything. And the Concrete Sakura, shout outs to the Concrete Sakura. She said that was the funniest thing I've ever heard anyone say on stage. And like, that's it. Like you said, now we're off to the races because like, can I do this outside of a Cars and Women event? Can I do this? Like, can I do this to people who want to laugh?
Yes. Yes. Okay. I, you absolutely can. And as you're saying that, I want, because there are these special people that are your barometers for if you did well or not, mm-hmm. because a crowd in and of itself is very fickle and is fickle based off things that often have nothing to do with you.
Right.
So to bring back the Jewish mysticism, in every crowd, there's a couple people that are actually dictating the health of a crowd. And if they're not there, it's a bad room. It's a bad night. And if they're there, they're the ones who laugh without needing the social proof of a person next to them or other people in the crowd laughing. They lead the way. They're leading the laughter. After your set, they heard a joke that didn't do well and they make sure they tell you, no, dude, that joke was great. You get rid of that joke, I will kill you. You know?
they come in different flavors, but there are certain crowd members where one of my favorite is the only laughs at one thing you say before you get off stage, but laughs like a rooster getting stomped through a mail slot. Mm-hmm. Those are my, if I could have, like, if I'm doing my thing in front of a crowd of 200 people, if I just get one person laughing at every joke, like they're watching a clown getting hit by cars, like, that's it. Because that's on par with, like, one of my favorite sounds in the world, camera off, off-camera laughter.
We bonded on this early on, yeah.
Like, that's one of the greatest indicators of, like, forget it, you hit a peak we did not measure for.
Camera guy laughing?
That's it.
It's funny.
In fact, yeah, because they're trained to watch like a whoopee cushion, roller coaster, slapstick, Buster Keaton resurrected from the grave cheating death and just have no compassion like a straight-faced orgasm. Mm-hmm. Calm as Hindu cattle. Won't flinch at a thing. But then you watch like SNL audition tapes mm-hmm. and like once the camera guy's laughing, it's over. Like,
yeah, you're
those
hired.
Are the guys that get hired.
Yeah.
So always. So that one laugh, the unrestrained, like, that was good,
yeah,
grasshopper. Like, right, that's, like that, I hate to say, is like social proof in a way, because it's not just funny. That joke is going to live rent-free in that mm-hmm. dude's head. You are now painting the ceiling of this guy's skull with this thing you wrote down on the back of a receipt.
Even with Alzheimer's one day, he will recall that joke perfectly at a drop of a hat, you know? to talk about that phenomenon, I had about, a week ago, I did a bit that was like, it was very much, I touch on race generally almost just as a through line for something else. But this was mm-hmm. like a very specifically a bit about the phenomenon of, I don't want to spoil the bit, but about like black cookouts. It was like very like, I'm touching a third rail here mm-hmm. because I'm white or whatever, which I'm not because I'm a writer. So I know where I know how to not get electrocuted, whatever. Right. But I could hear and I could see the mostly white audience go in their chairs like,
bracing.
I don't know. As though like a specter was like coming through and there was a seance and like, oh fuck, what was that or whatever. And I could see
Cody, I have chills.
One black guy at the fucking bar losing his mind and so grateful that I exist and this bit exists, because the truth of it and the perspective from a different area and the you are nailing this, but you know what I mean? Like, he was so grateful.
He's so cementing happy. It in a way.
Exactly. But he was invisible to everybody else but me. So all the white people that are like, and he was like, just
black laughter MP3.
The second I got off stage, I walked by him just because that was where I was walking. I didn't seek him out, but he like both hands on me like, dude, what is your Instagram? You know,
incredible.
And not in the way of like, I'm going to cancel you. The way of like, I need you in my life because what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Do you do weddings and funerals, young man?
Now, if I had listened to the Nervous Nellies, I might have dropped the bit. If he hadn't been there, I might have dropped the bit. Yeah. And look, I have confidence in my own material, but like, if it's unanimous, sometimes you're like, oh, maybe that joke does suck. Oh. Sure, you try it again, but whatever. But him... That's your fucking barometer.
You know what? I'm glad you bring this up. I did open mic at Red Room at KGB Bar. And that was one of the first times I was just reading stuff that ended up in the first book, All Dogs Go to Heaven Except Pit Bulls. I was just reading one-liners off a page, but I was almost offended at how good most of them did, which was a weird, like, that, like... In my head, it was like,
it's not that funny.
Like, that's like what's it? That was, that's yeah. Just a skipping stone between this is genius. I didn't know where to put this. And now we're back to genius. Now we're back to beating Sonic levels at 27 seconds flat, you know?
Yeah, it's easy mode. It's like, yeah.
Right. So the middle, like mediocre, ain't got nowhere to go, waiting for the bus ain't coming type shit. Fucking 80 IQ, private in the army, the gas go in the jetty, you know, like that, right? That was guy who insists on listening to the live version of songs he really likes. And a woman groan laughed. I didn't think that was possible. Like, I once heard a smug chuckle so powerful it was a smuckle. I still don't know what to call this groan laugh.
Yeah.
Because it was like, honestly, like, I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor started playing in her heart because I didn't think a human being could make that sound.
Yeah.
But there was laughter in it. So it for me, it was like you have been pulled from the pit of despair and some man in sweatpants and a Hawaiian shirt and a luchador mask has articulated the nightmare that has kept you up and that the living hell that you endured, I made ha-ha-tee-hee about.
I think there is something super infectious about somebody who looks nothing like you and who sounds nothing like you, articulating something that's so deep within your soul and your memory and your experience, and seeing that it's the cognitive dissonance of that is like so seductive and so transcendent a moment to create for somebody, sure.
Yeah.
And I've seen you create that within people, and I think that's an ability you have, an ability I have. I think it's an ability anybody great at what they do has, is like, okay, you're looking at something, but I am something else, and I will give you little crumbs that I'm something else.
Yeah.
And when you have those crumbs, you're going to feel so full and so whatever.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to take this toaster, I'm going to turn it upside down and shake it. And you're going to scoop it up ever so tenderly and put them on watercress crackers because, like, I know it's good too. I only have 5 minutes, so let's make this count.
Yeah.
Right. So I not to come all hoity-toity and high and mighty or anything, but the high water mark of art is when someone you've never met, someone who has no insight into your waking life or lived experience, and they doesn't matter, man. Paint, say, sculpt, sing, scream, carve into the wall, write on a bathroom wall, or like write with lipstick on a bathroom mirror. Like that, like The Laughing Heart by Charles Bukowski. Like for me, it's that.
Mm, yeah.
Like, because like the gods will show you chances. And when you take them, because to quote the last track of the Black Album by Metallica, Struggle Within, I think. Advantages are taken, not handed out. So when the god, for fuck's sake, when Hercules asked the gods for help, they were all like, act, do something. So like, right, when you, so you take these opportunities and they become easier to grasp and identify and utilize. This is probably going to sound corny, but like, there's a, for the ladies and jerks at home, because Mr. Clark is a cultured and astute artist. Whether it's shit in the Metropolitan Museum or quoting Wayne's World or The Simpsons out of context for no reason. There's a painter named Mark Rothko, and he did a lot of shit in his life, but he's best known for these fuzzy rectangles, and that's a gross oversimplification. But back when the modern art section of the Metropolitan Museum was on the fourth floor, they had a Rothko there. And Rothko had specific instructions to stand 18 inches away from it and let it hit you. And I saw people have breakdowns. I saw people walk away from it like they conquered something. I saw people walk away from it angry. Like, I didn't, bro, like, there's, like, because that skips questions and raises concern. Like, you know, when you see the call to prayer in Islam, some people start crying. Some people, they're, like, relieved. Some people, you see their body language change and, like, their neck and head and entire body, like, as if it's letting something go. And then sometimes you see dudes start shaking with anger. Like, so other than things in a religious context, art is the only thing I've ever seen have that, like, it's sacred and it's parallel to religion. Mm-hmm. It's not the same, but there are things intangible that art touches on.
It's psychic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. You once tweeted something to the effect of, I'm probably misremembering, but like, why science fiction gets to say I told you so and they're prophetic. And I probably fucked this up already. But you, like the creative nature of writing, and in some cases like cyberpunk or science fiction, like, because they were like drawing from the ether, but simultaneously looking forward, they get to say, I told you so. I probably fucked this up tremendously.
Yeah, I vaguely remember it.
Yes, it's real.
Yeah.
All right.
I know I've talked about it, but what you just said about the Rothko is ties into a great point that I is near and dear to my heart, which is, you know, a lot of the times we know this about Mona Lisa, right? We know this about certain great works of like, all right, you think you've seen a picture of it in your textbook in school, or if you Google image search it, whatever, you think you know what it looks like. Until you've stood in front of it, you have no idea what it looks like.
Right.
And this applies to the Mona Lisa. It also applies to modern art and Rothko and Koons and all these people that are so easy to dismiss. And they know they're so easy to dismiss. It's not some secret that you're telling them. They know they're so easy to dismiss. But they understand that, like, until you have stood in front of a Rothko, you do not know if you like Rothko. Because if you're posting some compressed JPEG to make fun of modern art and say, like, oh, nobody tries anymore. We need to go back to my vague idea of what traditional...
I could tell you exactly, you know, who... If you post something that criticizes CalArts Bean Mouth, someone will make a GIF of every fuzzy rectangle Rothko blurred into one, and they'll be like, meh. See? Yeah, that's exactly now, who does that.
The irony there, too, is that you intake CalArts Bean Mouth in exactly the way that you are representing it and showing it to people. Yeah. So you don't have to go to a museum and look at Bean Mouth to know you don't like Bean Mouth.
Yes.
Whereas you need to go to a museum and look at a Rothko to know whether you like a Rothko.
Yes. True.
Now,
true.
All these accounts with like a Roman statue face that are like tradition and blah, blah, blah. And like, oh my God, this art piece is just a toilet in a room or whatever it may be. It's like, fuck, dude, until you've stood in front of it, you do not know how you feel, how you think, how you anything. And if you don't allow yourself that moment of objective interaction, of actually doing the damn interaction, you don't know who you are.
It's, but that But that, as a bylaw imposed upon the self, is like intellectual sloth, because guy who hates Rothko that never stood in front of one. there's like 1,000 versions of that dude with anything. Guy yes. who hates Megadeth because he grew up listening to Metallica, fuck them, Steve, man. Yeah, and yeah. like there are, right, or like guy who never listens to the Deftones because of one shitty ex-girlfriend, and that's it. Like there's a door forever remaining closed, yeah. his life forever. You know, yeah, or yeah. like chick who never reads Thomas Pynchon because like, whoa, you asked out and got the one out of a million dudes with BPD instead of being a psychopath. Certainly. Right.
So, or even people who won't read Bukowski because of some vague notion.
Because they're weak.
Yeah. Yeah. Vague notion of what it is to read Bukowski, which or Ayn Rand or any. There are all these like cornerstone people that like, well, I'm not. What would read that so in my mind, so I'm not going to read it for myself and feel something or discover something within it that, God, it's waiting for somebody to discover from it.
You know, to your point, and where you don't know how you feel about something until you stand in front of it, I'm sure it sounds silly, but like, all right, there are these two artists that I had the pleasure of seeing on a whim. Mike Kelly, who's best known for Sonic Youth album cover art and other things, and his buddy Jim Shaw. And Jim Shaw had in the Whitney Museum just this, there were so many beautiful, incredible things, and one was just fake comic book covers to shit that doesn't exist, but it was like some alien who had like Green Lantern, like in a frozen, when hell freezes over in big pulp text. Mm-hmm. And like, but seeing it on a canvas, like a part of me was like, all right, dude, I get it. Like because he even got like the way the color reflects off of the cheapo quality pulp. Yeah. Paper, and he mimicked that, but on a canvas, and that was like, no, you started yeah. with something in your head, and you ended with the, I hope to God, exact fucking thing you started with.
Yeah.
But it was just like, or when not fighting crime, and it's Batman like sweeping and mopping and vacuuming and like, you know, just but because it looked like a weathered 1950 old, like, you know, you could clearly tell that this part of the comic was exposed to sun for like 17 years.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It was almost like, not in a hyper reality VR way, it was like almost too real. Like you gave me, like your thought is now there forever. Like that's right. So I saw pictures of that and I was like, fuck is this? And then like, it was a humbling ordeal.
Yeah,
it really was. And number two, before I forget, Taylor Drew is fucking hilarious. And when I first met her, I thought she was a light skinned Boricua. Because, like, she seemed like, oh, like, she'll fucking stab someone. Like, easy peasy, 1, 2, 3. Because, like she carries and expresses herself in a way that is, like, not like someone is void of social conditioning, but someone who, like, there are things this person has made up their mind about and don't give a fuck about. Or at this point, like, in my case, at this point, I want to be proven wrong. But like, but that like, no, I know I'm right. But like, but it comes from within, not like practicing, I know I'm right in front of a mirror for like 7 years. So now when you say it, everyone's like, this guy's fucking right. You know? Right. Like she has that. And you can't fake that. And I she, like with you, Cody, you expect good things from people and they pull through with great things. I have never seen someone channel disinterested so well in my life as Sidekick. My God.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And Taylor, if you're listening.
If you haven't watched Stain Hane's show, please, come on. We made a great thing.
Taylor, if you're listening, I'm sorry you have to hear it from me, but I could count on two hands the number of people who, not just the dance teacher, it was a separate inquiry of like, is she seeing someone, dude? But it was like, bro, who's Sidekick? She's fucking hot, bro. And I'm like, that, thank you. You could tell her, no, I'm good. I was like, okay. Like, yeah. you put her name in Google. You could find a way to have her tell you to go fuck yourself. I won't say that. bro, she's so hot. This is the second time you're telling me. What do you want me to do about this, man? So Taylor, like, I've had
and
to deal
with
that.
And not just her, but our horse pilot and our dance instructor. We chose some amazing women that we've shown on the show that, like, we talked about this on the commentary, but it bears repeating for those who didn't buy the DVD because it's a nugget of knowledge. Whenever anybody kind of like has that love lust falling for someone that is an actress or whatever in something that you've created, they're falling in love with a piece of art, but their grammar for it and how they're conveying it is, what's her Instagram or whatever like that.
Right.
They don't realize that they're it's paint that you've put on a canvas that they're falling in love with. And maybe they would love these people in life, and I'm sure they would, but only because you've chosen parts of their soul to put into the paint that you've put onto the canvas.
Oh, yeah. Like imagine the kind of woman that watches like Gary Oldman and Leon the Professional and goes, I want a man like that. Like, because and there are women like that.
Sure,
and the thing is, there are dudes who watch, what's that? Hold on. Michael Cera was in it, and he beats up people, and it was based off of a video game.
Scott Pilgrim.
There you go. Yeah. There are some dudes that watch Scott Pilgrim and see like some of the women in that, and they're like, "I missed out on young love," like because they're fucking morons. Yeah. But just real quickly, the Stained Hanes show kind of shines light on what I'd like to believe is who I am off camera, not wearing the mask.
Yes,
because if you only judged me by what I've written and what I post and my art and my flyers, listen, getting mass reported for impersonating myself, that's a new high for me, because up until then it was like everything about you is ugly and your soul is dog shit. You doxed someone, and their proof was flyers I made of their profile picture with like Impact font making fun of them. But I choked out a woman in Dime Square. I put Santeria curses on people. I have a cauldron to Siete Rayo himself, and I have like a silver Tibetan monkey skull inlaid with precious stones that I feed animals of four legs to do my bidding and throw bricks at people's luck. Yeah, I've had more fan fiction written about me than all the fucking Live Journal, dude.
Yeah.
And just
because I have a joke queued up.
Go for it. Go hit it. Hit it.
I'm like, I'm not going to pretend like I have an actual point. It's just a joke queued up. Choking a girl out in Dime Square, that's the password to get into a lot of clubs in that area. So let's cut you some slack there.
That's how you get cocaine at Sovereign House. That's the magic phrase you learned in the group chat where chinless Curtis Yarvin is like, fellas, what are we doing tonight?
Anyway, I'm sorry, but I just had to.
Oh, no, don't be sorry. For the ladies and jerks listening at home, in my mind's eye, Curtis Yarvin sounds like Paul Lynde, specifically the version of Paul Lynde from The Simpsons where he's the villain from The Radioactive Man Bit the Scoutmaster. Don't be afraid to use your nails, girls.
Oh, my God. That in your... Oh, okay. I don't know how this is going to happen. I understand that me saying this is going to be somebody else doing it, but I would love to see a skit that was a Hollywood Squares or a Match Game, but with just all these like right-wing adjacent personalities as the panelists.
Oh my God, yes!
Oh my God,
that would be perfect. Like fucking a top, like center square Captive Dreamer. Hello, girls, it's me, Captive Dreamer. One of my favorite things in the world is to drink sarsaparilla and talk about Sisyphus. I exist to launder other people's takes. Bang, bang, bang on the trolley. I was disowned by my dad. So, I'll never be at peace, and I drink a lot of patronage for that work. Come. Yes. You want me to maintain eye contact when you do it, Rondé Trevor? Yes. I want to sit at the Passage Press dinner.
Watch out. If you say the obvious about me, I'm going to dox you on my second account, and no notable figure is going to stop me. I'm seemingly immune to the terms of service. Time for some more fag dance. Bang, bang, bang on the trolley. Oh, God, what, Dad, why won't you love me? You publicly disowned me and quoted the fucking Bible. I hate you. I'm going to tell everyone at the funeral exactly what you fucking did to me. You did. Bang, bang, bang goes to hell.
Right. And everyone can do their thing.
Exactly.
It's just nine people who are not at peace with themselves and who will never make peace with Dad.
By the way, what you just did there was up there for me with Doug Stanhope's carnival that goes around in your mind when you're trying to go to sleep. That was I wish people could have witnessed what I just witnessed in person. And it further underscores why I would love you to do stand-up.
Oh, by the way, what you just heard. I'm working on something. I won't get it out of the bag. I'm working on something, but what you just heard is the first draft of something that I'm working on with someone. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah, and for people that are so dumb that they think, I bet by someone he means Cody.
No,
which are the same people that think, I bet Cody's staying here.
which is great. Which, by the way, first of all, there is at least one dude in every zip code who wears a mask. I'm sure there's someone in Cody's hood that probably has like a fucking tiger mask or like a great Sasuke mask. And he's just like some fucking bus driver for a middle school. Mm-hmm. Whenever me and another guy in a mask are in public, people always expect us to fight to the death and they're always let down. I was in Applebee's one time. And there was a guy in a fucking Hayabusa mask. Hayabusa, this Japanese wrestler, he's dope. He did the 450 splash. And they were really sad that we didn't just start fighting to the death. He was there with his wife and kids. And like, I'm there in my, because like, I eat there because the lunch special is nice and I want peace and quiet. Shut up. So they also have the Sunday bar. Don't judge. Yeah, everyone was really unhappy that I didn't try to go after him with a busboy cart and he didn't try to hide a knife between my ribs. Happens every time I'm somewhere with a guy in a mask. Mm-hmm. But, like, clearly this man with a different body type and voice is clearly you, Cody. Clearly you're this guy that made a genetic clone of an unalived person that exists in an alternate timeline.
Yeah.
That is a somewhat swarthy entity that exists in the planet known as Queens, which means Cody Stained Haynes. And that guy has like 30,000 followers.
I know. It's so weird. Anyway, I should mention that like as we record this, you are currently unmasked. I've seen you unmasked many a times. I'm looking across the table at you. I have a joke / thing queued up for this.
Go for it.
We're all Kiss fans in the audience. We all have enjoyed Kiss songs. When Kiss unmasked, okay, there were two members of Kiss that mm-hmm. it was like, you know what? Kind of hot.
Yeah.
Little hot. There were two members of Kiss that was like, oh.
I get it now.
Those two members, eventually not in Kiss anymore.
Damn.
The two members that everyone was like, you know what? Would.
Yeah.
They remained in Kiss forever. I would put you unmasked in the Would and in Kiss forever category. He's a handsome man, folks.
I will never be pretty boy Ace Frehley.
Okay, so Ace.
Well, Gene stayed, of course, because he's like the front man.
Yeah, but Gene, there's like moments where Gene's like a hot dude. Like, I don't know if you've...
Well, it depends.
Paul Stanley and Gene are the hot... Yes, Gene is letting himself go, but there's shots of Gene unmasked that you're just like, God damn, he looks like his son, and his son's hot.
It depends on set and setting, because there are some pictures where he literally looks like every negative Jewish stereotype yeah. your grandparents grew up hearing and watching. And then there are other pictures. Like, there's footage where, like...
But that's every Jewish person. They have one angle where they look like their relatives,
right.
elderly, right. and they have one angle where it's like, God, is that some hot
like,
Italian
like,
dude?
There are women where, like, from one angle, it's like, wow, you're Joan Rivers from 1968. And then, like, from another angle, it's like, wow, you look like a Semitic blood-drinking goblin that lives in a Middle Eastern cave. Like, yeah. This is a, yeah. I hate to say this. It's like, you look like the moneylenders from the Harry Potter movie. But then in this other photo, like, yeah. Wow, like, did you, like, you got any Tiny cute single Tim. Friends?
Tiny Tim, there is video footage. You can go right now on YouTube. There is Tiny Tim video footage where you're like, that is one of the most beautiful men that has ever existed. And there is video footage of Tiny Tim where it almost looks like a parody of what you would think Tiny Tim would look like.
Now imagine, seeing someone like Tiny Tim, or like, dare I say, look, Charles Bukowski was no prize pig or Marlon Brando, but that man ate more pussy than cervical cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So like, imagine being enamored by him going, oh, you're still here. Right. And then like piano music starts playing in your heart because you read his poem. So now, and then from certain angles, he's like typing on the, he looks over at you with contempt.
Mm-hmm.
And like from that angle, that's like the most handsome man in the fucking world to you.
Yeah.
Assuming you're like hot Nepalese woman in his Los Angeles apartment in 1981, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, just real quickly, before I forget, I have been, before I get to the, I was told I look like a extra from Narcos, among other things.
I don't think that's true.
Oh, I'll take it.
Yeah, but, I mean, go for it.
But there's a, Kiss is notoriously litigious and they hate it when people use their trademark without their permission. And by permission, I mean where's the money.
Number two to the Eagles.
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
know if you know anything about the Eagles, but good Lord.
Oh, no. That,
even like, me mentioning the Eagles right now, I'm...
Oh, no. Like, Ticketmaster is taking a shit on your like living room floor right now because you just said the Eagles. Every time someone plays the Big Lebowski and it gets like, I don't like the Eagles, man. Right. Like, someone's life gets a little worse.
Yes.
So,
Eagles is Scientology level.
There's Hotel California is actually like the Scientology center in LA.
Exactly. It was about all of them, man.
Going clear is what they meant by like, you know, you could check out any time you want, but you'll never leave. It's going clear. So, damn. All right. Real quickly, there's this footage of Gene Simmons and one other dude from Kiss that showed up to like unauthorized Kiss convention, and at first everyone was like, yeah, and they were like tearing shit down and knocking over stands. In that video, it was like, that dude looks like a guy people in other bands who've seen the road are scared of.
Mm.
Like, in this angle, it's like, that's the guy you fight at the end of, like, level 6 in some early 90s side-scrolling Japanese beat-em-up game.
Yeah.
Like, in that's who he looked like, even though, like, on the reality TV show, it's like, your doting Jewish father in all black.
Mm-hmm. And what I think that is, to be like, if we want to get deep on a level, is it's a thing. It's the Roald Dahl thing of like the bad thoughts make you ugly, rather than, and if you have good thoughts, even if you're ugly, you'll be attractive. I think there's an artist version of that where like somebody makes great art, or somebody taps into their own soul, or taps into the above or the sideways or whatever, and brings things into fruition, they get hotter, like for real. Like, you know, there's actresses, there's whatever that like, they're not going to be considered on the level of like these hive mind, this is the accepted whatever, like Sydney Sweeney or Scarlett Johansson or whatever, you know, like manufactured whatever.
Zendaya.
Yeah, like you just see like a person who's like good at what they do. It's like really attractive. And you don't have to be a woman seeing that in a man to see that. You can be a man seeing that in a woman.
Yeah.
Or whatever it may be. And so like, you know, Kiss might be a good barometer of like, there's periods of Kiss where they were on fucking fire, like for real,
dude.
And they were probably at their hottest when they were on fire, and when they phoned it in, they started to look like their relatives.
And then when it was Kiss Unmasked, it was a regime change, you know.
Yeah.
It was, but you know what, dude? I think that's one reason why some dudes have a fondness for like tomboys, because it almost implies that like this woman is active or athletic or like, and not every tomboy has short hair,
well,
but
now
like
people are really like being like Caitlin Clark would big time. And I think part of that is exactly what we're talking about. I don't think she's unattractive. I think she's an attractive person, whatever. But I do think that's part of it, is that like people are watching her, you know, get an elbow to a face and like take it and like still nail threes or whatever it may be.
But it's also, yeah. but it's also like, can't one make the argument that like, look, like as far as professional men who punch other professional men in the face for money, Muhammad Ali was one of the most handsome men to walk the planet.
Yeah.
So like, even footage of him mid shit talking, like women, it doesn't matter what part of the menstrual cycle you're in, all women start to ovulate at pictures of like Muhammad Ali in his prime.
And like, Oscar De La Hoya in his prime. Come on, dude.
Dude, Oscar De La Hoya in his prime is like, he's the guy, every 6'4" inked up guy that saw Motorhead live and goes to see like Sleep live, and they're in the first three rows and they don't smile and their arms are folded the entire time. Right. That guy is scared of 90s Oscar De La Hoya making sweet love to his wife.
Oh my
God. And that big guy probably called him gay. And he was like, I proved you wrong. I am not gay. I proved you wrong with your wife. Right. Like that, no, dude. Even like boxers that weren't conventionally handsome, but like you look at them when they were on fire, like Roberto Duran looks like the guy every mobster is afraid of who's going to fuck his gumar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and at that time, he was like putting people in comas with his hands of stone.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you know what, though, dude? When people are, I think that's, you know how, I don't, look, like if you have to read objectivism or PUA stuff for obvious things you could have intuited from the real world, and if that's the first time you learn of these things, you're beyond help. But there are like concepts that, you know, like it, you sort of see it and then you see that frequency and pattern. So like, in so many words, like women tend to be drawn with men who have purpose,
mm-hmm.
men who are focused and they're trying to like get something done or get off the ground, or it's one reason why like some women go gaga over men who work with their hands, because you're seeing the results obviously in real time. It's one reason why women love artists, because like fucking look at again Bukowski, right? And even though his first book wasn't published until he was fucking 53, and like who gives a fuck about any late bloomer argument you could make, like that man crammed a lot of life from 53 to death.
Oh yeah.
All right. So, I think with purpose, all right, not just with women looking at men, but like, you know, like when you, like, you know, I can't speak on behalf of gay men or straight women. I don't know if gay women see women this way that men do. I don't know. But like when you see a woman who's like, if she's gotten good at something.
Oh, yeah.
And like she understands the ins and outs of something that like there might not be an FAQ for, sometimes that's really fucking hot, because that shows dedication, that shows like second order thinking or beyond that, that shows the need to understand working parts, the need to assess when you have to pivot or change, or, you know, like I'm not getting the result I wanted, so I either have to change like what I'm aiming for or the process. And you only learn that when doing the thing.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, in all due respect, ladies, if you're good at something, that's really fucking hot.
Mm-hmm. There's a Chris, I want to say it's Chris Rock. I hope I'm correct. I'm pretty sure it's Chris Rock, 90% sure. There's a Chris Rock bit that on the surface sounds like, oh, just easy misogynist joke, but is actually the kernel of wisdom there is exactly what we're talking about, which is, ladies, if you're complaining about like you can't find a man or whatever, every day, 6:30 p.m., you cook a meal, you open your windows, there's going to be a line of dudes. That's all it takes. You know what I mean? So what I mean, that's the purpose that we're talking about. It doesn't have to be a meal. It can be anything. But the reason why I brought up your looks is that I wanted to bring it back to, if you enjoy his work, there's no room, there's no realm possible where Stain Haynes wouldn't be attractive. And there are so many people on the internet that have so much more fame and success quotes than you or I, who their face gets revealed. It's, oh my God, don't see me without my blah, blah, blah. And you're like looking at somebody and you're like, why was I ever listening to this person?
Number one, physiognomy never lies. Yep. Number two, your intuition will never lie to you. And to take physiognomy on face value every single time is a million times safer than ignoring it.
But we're also not talking about arbitrary, unchosen aspects of physiognomy. We're talking about what your face becomes and what your body becomes when you have purpose.
Oh, yeah.
Versus when you are purposeless.
Right. Because even like, okay, so there's a guy in right-wing Twitter. He's a notable figure. His name is Lomez. I forget his Christian name. And it should be noted, big ups to Marcel Dumas. He's one of the smartest men out there. He has a point of contention to where, like, don't call them by their fucking pretend mystique names. These guys have... No, because, like, you know, it's like, look at fucking David Koresh. A name like David Koresh, and you're like, yeah, I'll fucking take up arms for David Koresh. When you find out this cocksucker's name is Vernon, you look at his face, and you're like, that's a Vernon. Mm-hmm. That's a fucking dork.
Yeah.
That's a guy who defiled women under Megadeth posters and scared chicks at bars, who could have been nabbed when he was out jogging, but no. Anyways, so this Lomez jerk off, one, he's not a very good writer. Two, for all smarty pants guys, they can't write. Or like, bro, how does an illiterate piece of shit in a mask? I'm not wearing a mask. How does an illiterate piece of shit in a mask write books? These people struggle to market themselves. The point I'm trying to make is this. For every one Lomez, because he's like TV handsome, and even when he's like, ha, 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 that's right, we are super mega based, the publishing Man's World. Never mind that Man's World did not have physical issues until issue number 4. Unlike Cars and Women magazine, what kind of fucking racket do you have, a magazine or a publication and do not have physical issues? Everything about you is ugly and your soul is dog shit. Yes, and Man's World issue number 4 is actually number 1. And we hate Troons and Troons bad. And there was a trans woman in a centerfold and whatever. Our degenerate is more based than your degenerate. I'm Lomez. So even when he's doing that, he's like evil bad guy handsome, but he's still handsome. Yeah. But it's like, wow, if you weren't missing something in your life, and if you really are a married man with kids, and you didn't spend hours a day online, and you weren't the equivalent of Brooklyn Dad Defiant, who browses poll for good boy points and trying to set up, like, you know, alternate channels to the patronage network with which you are attached to launder other people's takes, I'm pretty sure he'd look more handsome. Like, you know, here's me and my wife and kids, instead of like, here's me being a piece of shit and doing everything I claim to hate on the internet, but it's okay because I am in the smaller, more exclusive Mean Girls right-wing group chat with Jeffrey Martin, the guy who sounds gay and we all make fun of behind his back, but we need him because reasons, I don't know. He did quote the Bible, his father, when he disowned him. I'm Lomez. I'm not happy. So for every one of those, there's like 20,000 fucking hairy potato balls, unfortunate looking men with the Charlie Kirk massive, like, you know, Asperger's gums, you know, no offense to anyone with the Asperger's out there. People who look, see, even Steve Buscemi, like if you just saw a picture of Steve Buscemi and had no like context, he doesn't strike you as like remarkably ugly. It's almost like, oh, that's an interesting looking character.
Yeah, right? Character.
He kind of looks like a guy you might have used to see in like Sunnyside.
Yeah, I grew up in the same neighborhood that he lived, so yeah. I see him all the time. And I remember a friend of mine would have just as many opportunities as me to see him. And I would even, like, when I was walking with this person, be like, oh, that was Steve Buscemi back there. And they would just never notice him. And it's because you can turn and turn off faces. And your face is not hardwired to you. And Buscemi can turn and turn off his face. And I've seen him a million times. I know what he looks like in person. So, you know, I can spot him. But somebody who's trained to only watch The Big Lebowski and Reservoir Dogs and all these things, they've seen a specific face that he turns on.
Oh, shit, you're right. Yeah. One time I saw Willem Dafoe, and he knew that I knew that he knew that I knew that he knew that I saw him.
Yeah.
And his demeanor, he had a really lovely smile because I was like, Mr. Dafoe, you the man. And he was like, thank you so much.
Yeah.
But he was just like, and what the fuck was he doing walking around at 7:50 something in the morning anyways, trying to get to work early. And I'm like, there's no fucking way that's the dude from Platoon. I swear, because it's me and him on the fucking block.
Yeah,
and I'm like, Elias? Right. And then, and once we get within, you could read my face, I could read your face distance. It wasn't like, oh, here we go again. He just kind of,
You caught me.
it's me.
It's Waldo.
It's Elias. I survived the war. Right. So you're right. Because, like, I had to do a triple take to make sure it was him.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like you said, you could turn your face off. And I'm like, that's not Willem Dafoe. Mm-hmm. Second time, I know that's not Willem Dafoe. And then the third time, he closed his eyes and smiled. And then his gait started to change a little bit. And then it was like, Barnes is going to kill me now.
It's like catching a leprechaun. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like, that's not a fucking leprechaun. And then you realize, oh, no, wait, that's a fucking leprechaun. Yeah. And the leprechaun's like, all right, you caught me. Here's a gold coin of seeing me and see ya.
Didn't sound like how you'd expect, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
But no, it's, look, some people's politics are a direct result of how they look. And when you look at how these hideous sensory homunculi made flesh look in person, oh, no wonder. No, oh my God. They just, and everything you've accused me of being, you really are. Especially you, Aristophanes, with your pointy Madonna 80s cone tits. Your email was in the adult friend finder leak, so all of that shred, but homeboy, you don't look like you got a strong back. You look like you are very acquainted with the cuck chair in the corner. You got bigger, juicier tits than your wife. Fuck is wrong with you, you wall-eyed, pussy-ass, sensory homunculus-looking, ugly, fetid, no-redeeming-social-value, punk-ass nigga. So for, all right, but then you have...
I love how this has just become cutting promos.
Oh, I'm sorry this turned into a shoot interview.
I should mention, there's a lot of this is, I stay so far away from all of this. So a lot of this is just you're speaking a language I am not picking up on, but I get what you're saying.
Right.
I totally get it. Anybody who's not initiated, I'm sure gets what you're saying too.
Oh no, just let the record state, I've never came at someone who didn't come at me first.
Mm-hmm.
And so to kind of circle back to something earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, and knock on wood, if this happens, one can only hope. People, I don't know what people expect, especially when they see like pictures and footage of me in my mask. I don't know what people expect underneath it. I've had a handful of people make very educated guesses as to what I look, and one person was perfectly accurately like on the money. You look like this, I bet you. And I'm like, you won a prize. like that's actually like, you don't work for the fucking, and are you the guy in the white utility van circling my block twice tonight? Someone once told me I look like an extra from Narcos. You said I look like George Clooney Batman from Batman and Robin. I haven't shaved since we filmed the Stained Hanes show, right. So I look like I only catch.
Right now, you look like Mel Gibson.
I look like I only eat what I catch and kill and sleep under a car.
Yeah.
I will say though, like some women see the look. Like my hair is brown, but my beard is like mostly white.
Mm-hmm.
So like this puts me in a really weird area where like young women with daddy issues. Women my age that are like can't tell if they're younger or older than me, but they're like, either way, he's got size 14 feet. Women get a weird look on their face when they see a size 14 feet out in the wild. But it's funny when you see a guy with like, it's like reverse John Wayne instead of dainty little hooves and like hands, seeing a guy with like Daffy Duck feet and then like a little like child's like Tommy Pickles hands. No, I have Cyclops hands.
Yeah.
Look, I'm always at a loss for words when you say that I'm handsome, because as a lot of men listening to this can attest to this, men don't, not all men hear the words "you're handsome."
Yeah, yeah.
Not
yeah.
all. And it's insane how
you can go years and decades.
Oh, that's why one compliment, they'll ride that out like yeah. it's no one's business. So for years, I've gotten things like, "You look great in an undershirt. You have Cyclops hands. You look like a character actor in every Quentin Tarantino movie. You, oh no, just like, and
if you were ever in front of Tarantino, you would be tending bar in a scene in his next movie
with the beard, with the
yes,
beard.
100%.
So
100%.
So like, and to her credit, like, and you know what? It's funny you mentioned that, because like she was like, part of her grieving process when her father died was like, one way she coped with it was like, you know, getting good at
play. Wait, who are we talking about?
It's a girl I dated who called me, like, she said, "I look like a character actor in every Quentin Tarantino movie."
Okay.
Like, one of the reasons why I thought like that I sort of found attractive is like, she was a Greek girl from the neighborhood, like tough as nails, but you know, kind of like what tomboys, like, it's because like there's something inside that's like something actually very tender that you choose not to reveal, or was hurt, or something happened at an earlier point in life. So now you look like the woman the girls in the Marilyn Manson shirts are afraid of. All right. That was her. Okay.
Got it.
So it turns out part of the grieving process was like, because her dad used to play solitaire and watch Seinfeld just for Kramer. Okay? I don't know what it is. Immigrants love Kramer because he's like Buster Keaton. Everything is on his face. Or like Harold Lloyd, or, right. So, you know, he would go, Mr. Kramer.
One of the best physical comedians ever.
Dude,
on TV.
And yeah. that takes, so see, one of the ultimate bell curves is slapstick.
Yeah.
Like, I just think there's no, so even Chris Farley had comedic timing you cannot find anywhere
Absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely. And also with physical comedy, sorry, but to do it well, it hurts and you can't do it forever.
Right.
And that's why Michael Richards isn't still doing it. And that's why Chris Farley eventually passed. And that's why anybody who has ever been good at physical comedy, whether you're a pro wrestler or a comedian or whatever, certain point, you can't do it anymore because you kind of have to do it for it to look right.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I thought it was kind of hot that she got really good at like card games and dominoes and was like hustling people out of their money at like Washington Heights. But it's like, yo, that crazy white bitch, because she was Greek. Right. But like, you know, she would learn Spanish to talk shit and say like, "It's the Greek here to take all your money." And, you know, "La griega está aquí a sacar todo tu dinero." Like, she would learn how to talk shit in Spanish.
Yeah.
And like, "You're not even old enough to drink. You're fucking hot." Like, these are dudes. This was when like Bush was in office. So face tattoos only meant you're dealing with Anton Chigurh levels of evil.
Mm.
Right. You run the risk of being shanghaied, sexually trafficked, or fucking raped and murdered every night you go out there to take their money, and you, damn. And they just, like, there was something really, I finally get why Karen and Goodfellas said that. I gotta admit, there was something hot about it.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, I get it. I get it now. Well, I got it. Now you get it, ladies and jerks listening. But very quickly, just to put this thing to rest, I have been told I look like if Colonel Kurtz and Soupy Sales had a baby. One time I helped an old Jewish woman cross the street, and she said, "You are the most handsome Jewish man I ever met." And like,
I was about to say, like, you bear a slight resemblance to a Jewish cousin of mine.
Really?
Yeah. And it's just like, but I think it's just like, I don't know. I think there's this quality to people that transcends their race, their upbringing, their this, that, and the other, where it's just like, I don't know, archetypes exist in the ether, and you belong more to the spiritual realm than you belong to anything on earth. for some reason, the first person that comes to mind in this regard is Fiona Apple. Like, she looks like a celestial being more than she looks like any particular race or religion. Yeah. But when you look at Fiona Apple, if you stare enough at her, you're like, oh, she looks like this distant relative of mine, or she looks like this person. You know what I mean?
Like, you know who kind of looks like that in some ways? Tori Amos.
Yeah,
Because like she's done so much. Like, in fact, like she was in Have a Nice. I don't know if it was in Have a Nice Day by Mick Foley, but he talked about volunteering at like
great book, by the way.
I think he talked about writing. He talked about volunteering at like a crisis hotline that Tori Amos ran or was a spokesperson for.
Yeah,
and he said that like, it wasn't the manager. It wasn't the guy who reached out to me. It wasn't the guy like I spoke to when I trained and I took the seminar and had to deal with people in a crisis. It was Tori herself who put her hand on my shoulder and said, Mick, you need to go home because you've dealt with a lot since you started and you need to decompress and you're wearing it on your back and I want you to be okay. And he said, why did no one see that up? And he said when she was addressing him, he was like, it reminded him of the angels he saw in the painted glass at church.
Yeah.
There was just like her compassion made her almost seem like ethereal.
Mm-hmm.
And multi-million award-winning Grammy nominated artist like that. No, she's still clearly like in the realm of good somehow.
And you can't go to Sephora and ask for them to do that on your face. You know what I mean? Like, that comes from inside out.
Yeah. You have to murder a unicorn and redeem that for a gift card that Sephora is like, we'll make you look like a sweetheart.
Yeah.
We'll make you look like we'll make you look like someone you want to bring home to mom.
It's impossible. There's no, much like there's Uncanny Valley and much like AI can never get past a certain point and all these things, there's no makeup that can fake that. You know, it's exuded. It comes through the pores, man. Wrapping this up, anybody listening who's heard the show before, if this is your first time, we always wrap this show up with stupid questions. Can I ask you some stupid questions to close the show out?
Always.
By the way, this has been a pleasure, as always.
Thank you. This has been, it really has been long overdue.
Yeah.
And I am looking forward to opening for you, and you gotta give me your suggestions and the crap I've written down that you think the crowd might like, because
this is off mic talk.
I know, because you know the crowd better than I do, but yeah, I figured, yeah, sure. You know, listen, you just got a peek at how sausage is made. What you what you just heard right now is like Ted DiBiase and Hulk Hogan going, and then you're gonna put me in the headlock, and then
exactly, right, man. Everybody wants an inside look to things because they think it's going to be as beautiful as the finished piece or completed art form that they're seeing, and then you look at the inside and it's actually like, oh hey man, just remember to go over my thing and just let me know which you think is going to work with this audience and blah blah blah.
Yeah, that's, you know what,
it's,
it looks
not
like
sexy, it's not whatever
you want to know how unglamorous and ugly and sweaty it is. Remember in Goodfellas when Jimmy's like, don't worry about it, and he convinces Henry they're not gonna whack Maury, and then they fucking whack Maury like 8 seconds later. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing like fucking Henry, like the weight of the world is off his shoulders. He's finally, he's not holding himself in this weird marionette, unnatural way. And Jimmy's like, I'm a violent, friendly sociopath, facial, De Niro noises. Right. And then Maury fucking eats it so hard. They leave him in the fucking car. Right before his mortal coil of 7, we're going to get some Danish for Belle. Yeah. Like, that's all right. So all right. That's what you saw, the comedic equivalent of that.
Yeah, yeah. How things are assembled is pretty mundane and uninteresting. Anyway, stupid questions. I'm going to ask you some stupid questions.
All right.
They're going to be of a lesser quality than what came before, because that's how we go out.
I refuse to believe that, but okay.
Right. First stupid question. Stained Hanes. Are we talking about Skidmark underwear, or are we talking about the process of creating a t-shirt and getting a little bit of like extra ink or paint on the shirt as you are making it, or irregular shirts that you buy at Dollar Tree or wherever that are slightly imperfect and sometimes have weird chemical whatever on them.
It's anything you want it to be.
That's what I thought. And that's what I knew, but I just wanted to ask it because I think people probably at home probably wonder.
Most people think there's an origin story behind my name. I could green text it before we go, but only 1 out of 100 people ever imagine a dirty shirt when they think of Stained Hands.
Yeah.
And like,
but that's part of your passion is making t-shirts.
Yeah. So, right. Because no two Stained Hands are alike. And that's the joke.
I wonder what I did to get Hanes to ban me on my main account, and maybe they'll make nice now.
I think, too, also, like, with any artist, with any art, we're looking for double meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even just the simplicity of Hanes meaning underwear and shirt,
yeah,
is something that hasn't been seized upon in quite the way that you have.
Right.
In that, like,
sweatpants, too, yeah, and hoodies.
Yeah, it's like a utility and also hints of lowbrow and all, you know what I mean? Like, it's you were encompassing the entire body, yet there is a connotation of underwear to a certain extent.
Yes.
So I think, I do think Hanes is such a beautiful word that you've utilized and you've gotten art out of. And
yeah.
I'm
actually kind of partial to it only because some people call me Hanes. It's always weird when people say Mr. Hanes and I'm like, that's my father. Mr. Hanes is always like, what is your fucking deal, bro? Like, I get it. Especially when someone older says Mr. Hanes, then it's like, fuck, like, why are you talking to me? Like, I'm a consigliere like Don Clark. Like, bro, I'm like, I'm just a cleaner in Astoria. Like, I'm not as high in the totem pole as you think I am. But, I will say that I don't care what people call me as long as they call me. It is funny to be like, you shitty underwear, which is on par with like, oh my God, I'm going to try to shame this guy like a woman and say, oh my God, he wear a mask in social occasions. Can you like believe that? I mean, he's actually his profile picture in real life and he says who he says he is. Oh my God, can you believe that? Now I can't go pee-pee properly because I like, I mean.
It's right. Also the same people who are like, pro wrestling's fake. Therefore, it's bad. You know, like
it's male ballerina.
You know what I mean? Whatever. Anyway, second stupid question. Okay, so this isn't your favorite. This isn't what you think is best. But what cartoon, television show, whatever, televised animated thing from your youth would most easily send you back? If you were to watch it right now, to what it feels like to be a kid and to be watching it,
it's
like
a tie between The Tick and Freakazoid.
The Tick and Freakazoid. I would have nailed that.
It's a tie between. It's a. I can't.
If we were playing the dating game, I would have gotten that completely right, and we're not even in a relationship.
Bravo!
It would have been. I would have wrote down The Tick. I would have started to
F R E A K and then cross it out. Yeah. And I'm like, were you about to write Freakazoid?
And then I would have left both of them and then your fucking thing turn around to Tick and Freakazoid.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm making you breakfast tomorrow. That's it. No, but it would be a tie between the Tick and Freakazoid.
And so we're, you know, obviously The Simpsons was fundamental to all of us, but do you think the Tick and Freakazoid was fundamental to your comedic outlook to a certain extent?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, but The Simpsons is something that I returned to as an adult and being able to apply it to things in my lived experience. And even the Democrat Republican jokes they made in the early 90s are still now more prescient than they've like ever been.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
They're like, of a higher quality.
In fact, remember, like, I think it was Bart's Elephant where like Stampy rampages through a convention center and it like first the Republicans, then the Democrats. And it was like the Republicans are like, yay. Cause they see her like, and their slogan is basically like, we treat our own like shit or something. Right.
Yeah.
And then like the other, we treat others like shit, boo. Like, right. But that, or like when Sideshow Bob tries to kill Aunt Selma, and I'll get out early because of the Democrat in the White House. Right. That's So yeah, I'm sorry if that scared anyone. But I would argue that The Tick made me look at, because like comic books were a big inspiration for me growing up. So The Tick was like The Tick. There's an early episode of it's the there's a The Tick versus The Tick, and it takes place at a superhero nightclub, and it takes every cliche of like multiple Superman or who's the real Captain America or no, this guy's just a fucking jerk off who's like a rich kid and he wants to be called the Tick and he has like a high tech. Right. But like the wholesomeness of the Tick, the real Tick, like that's part because he has like zero intelligence, but he's nigh on. He's like Sailor Moon. Like he's a fucking dummy, but his heart is so pure.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Doom will never like stop him from like mm-hmm. achieving his goal. Okay. I've been told Jon Snow from Game of Thrones is the same way, but I've never seen Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay. You'd like, I'm sure I'm not the first person to tell you this, you'd like the books better than the show. Mm. But I would never tell anybody to sign up for reading a series of books where we've waited that long for the next book to come out. You know what I mean?
Oh, so. Oh, well, we're not talking about the Dark Tower series. Oh, okay. Just making sure.
You said...
Sorry.
That was a dagger right there.
Ooh!
Yeah, anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So, as you were talking about comic books, here's another, you know, glimpse, not literal, but imagine in your mind's eye what I would describe that you look like.
Mm-hmm.
If we put you at any Comic-Con at, like, a booth, and we put... intricate, beautiful, like Moebius or Frazetta stuff
yeah.
laid out in front of you, like airbrush and also like real paint, like prints and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
People will walk up and believe that you drew that Conan and that this and that whatever.
Well, actually, I had my girlfriend. Well, I mean, if I don't call her my girlfriend, she'll get angry. So I had my girlfriend at the time take a Polaroid of me and then I painted it. So that one's 79. That one's 125. Yeah. But no, you're making me out to be like I fucking killed and ate Fabio for his powers.
No. That's not what I'm describing. I'm describing that if there was a giant, beautiful, like fantasy art thing
mm-hmm.
and you were standing in front of it, people would think, oh, that guy drew that.
Well, I think the beard also makes me, because
the beard is doing a lot of the heavy lifting.
Oh, no shit. Like if I'm sitting at a park bench writing, like women now have a crisis of confidence because yeah. they're like, if I get him to look up, he has a beard.
So.
The best part is if like she sits across from me and now she's in it to win it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little time goes by and I catch myself going like, that's fucking hilarious. And then go back to writing like, right yeah. now, like, is she titillated or scared?
Yeah,
and, you do right. It's
yeah.
Or honestly, I don't laugh like Sideshow Bob. I don't. But like, you know, sometimes people are really stubborn and they'll do anything except say something out loud. Yeah. So like, sometimes, like, oh, this happened a few days ago.
I've said this before, but you have a Robert De Niro in Cape Fear quality to you.
Thank you. Because like, here's the best part though. You know how like there's a kind of woman or young woman that like all animals are just friendly to?
Oh yeah.
And like old people are like, I'm just gonna tell you about the hats we wore in 1943. Right. And the right.
Yeah.
So like the dude equivalent of that is when like homeless schizos are like, I did you know that the real rulers of the earth are on a continent that we're not taught about, and the earth is actually a lot bigger than we were told about, and then we're lied to in school, and then like, and right. That guy, those dudes are like super friendly to me, but so are animals. So I look like I know what it's like to hear the death throes of a man who did not accomplish everything in his life. But salchicha dogs are like super friendly to me and they're the yeah. nastiest pieces of shit too. Even motherfuckers who walk their cats on a leash, the cat's like, yo, what's up, dude? I'm like, what's going on, man?
All right.
Right. So all I'm saying is, ladies, ask Cody for my number. if half of what you're saying about me is true.
All right, last stupid question because I got to pee really bad.
No, I'm getting two more stupid questions now.
Oh no,
it's crunch time.
Okay, I'm going to ask you this just because people on the internet are probably going to listen to this, and people on the internet have stupid things that they want to know.
Hell yeah!
And so I'm just going to do it because I'm going to pander. but I'm preambling it and I'm preempting it so I can get away with it. And also, it's also an irony thing. And also, it's also an irony thing. All right. What's your favorite superhero comic book movie?
The first Spider-Man movie is the best origin, is the best superhero origin movie ever made. But I'm going to have to say, because I'm familiar with the source material, the second Spider-Man movie is the greatest superhero movie ever made.
All right, there we go. And one more question before I go pee. What is, without revealing your habits or anything in that regard, what is somewhere in New York City that you feel is underrated or overlooked? Or because I get these things a lot with people coming into town and they're like, you know, whatever, what should I check out? And I help them out and tremendously because I'm from here. But what is something that you believe is underrated about New York City, visually, culinarily, whatever it may be, that you would recommend to somebody coming here?
In no particular order. Wohop, the Lemon Ice King of Corona, the part of Flushing Meadow Park where they filmed that scene, Men in Black. The whole entire park is gorgeous. Why not get your photo at the Men in Black spot while you're there too? The reputation that Mexican food, specifically tacos, have in LA, that's nonsense. You could have better tacos and any kind of Mexican or Central American cuisine on Roosevelt Avenue. You think I'm joking, but go find the Goku taco truck and thank me later. If you've ever seen the movie Once Upon a Time in America, there's a very beautiful shot of like Manhattan down under Manhattan Bridge.
And yes,
like
yes.
Everyone go take
not a, just in there, but a bunch of other movies too. Yeah,
just go take a picture there. The only shrine to all of San Gennaro and all of North America is in Little Italy. That scene where The Godfather 2 happened, Vito Corleone whacks Don Fanucci. And right, so that the patron saint of the impossible, the patron saint of Napoli, the only shrine to him in all of America, I think, is on Mulberry Street. Go there.
And just over from there, sorry to interject, but
no,
Mott Street, there's a catty corner area where you've seen 9 billion movies shot in that one, like, block radius.
Is it a downhill corner?
Kind of. But the point is, I've gone there with like people from out of town. The second we start walking on the street, they feel like they've been there before because they've seen it a million times. I have to pee so bad.
Oh, but okay.
Anyway, let's just wrap it up.
Okay. Well, one last thing.
Yes.
One last thing. For the best dumplings in New York City, you would think that if you go to Excellent Dumpling House, you'd have the best dumpling house, but like fucking surface level shit is not often what it is. So on the way to Wohop, which is at 17 Mott Street, Hopkey is really nice too. Some friends of mine like Hopkey more than Wohop. But on the way to Wohop, there's a right turn that goes downhill and it is not far from a park. And when you go downhill, there's going to be awning. And the awning, all it says is fried dumplings. You go get your dumplings there. They're so good, they even sell it frozen. You could bring them at home. So if Cody doesn't pee, he's going to implode, then explode.
All right. Thank you for listening. See ya.
Bye.
Thank you all for listening. And one more time, killthelinefilms.com. Give money. Give a dollar. Give $2.50, give $5, whatever you want to give, whatever you want to set it to give per month. That's how you can support me in all the film endeavors that I do. So thank you to those who do support, and thank you to those who will now support. Thank you for listening. See you soon.